just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
I want to begin this podcast with a quick testimonial about Gabe Winslow and his amazing mortgage team. You can reach them at mortgagesbygabe.com or simply dial 832-557-1095. Here's the testimonial. So since our house is taking a while to sell, we decided to buy a lesser home, in quotes, to move the kids to the new school while we continue to sell our house and continue to look for a bigger future house. Gabe convinced us to rent the house out that we were purchasing now when we move into our bigger house later. He really is the most helpful and informative loan guy we've had by a mile. We were trying to put funds together to put down 20% on this house without selling our current house that wouldn't have to escrow, and Gabe found us an option where we only have to put down 5% without escrowing. I can honestly say that we never would have received that option if we went with the traditional Wells Fargo, Bank of America type of loan officer. Along with that, he's broke down every interest rate percentage he can lock down for us, with buying points or not, how long it will take to recoup money from buying points, etc. It is the most informed I've ever been in the house buying process. The best part of all of this, is he called me this morning to explain all of this to me, along with giving me an email to detail it as well. He further explains that he can lock in these rate options and says that he would recommend me locking these in because the markets are about to adjust and he believes they won't be in my favor. Wisely, I took his advice, knowing that he's way smarter than I am at this, and less than an hour after doing so, he was proven right and I was much better for it. I guess this is a long drawn out way of saying thank you again for putting us in touch with him, and I will definitely use him again and recommend him to family, friends, and others as well. That, ladies and gentlemen, is a satisfied everyone gets a trophy listener, a really good guy. I won't out your name because I didn't get your consent, but that is one of many dozens of testimonials I've gotten about the quality of service that folks have gotten from Gabe Winslow and his mortgage team. If you're interested in that kind of quality service and that sort of expertise, pick up the phone and dial 832-557-1095. Well, speaking of change, you then are the part of the next iteration. And this is a constantly iterating industry.
It is.
You move on from rivals and you start something called
24/7 Sports.
24/7. And that had a number of innovations, both on the business side, let's say, with respect to ads and how you create the SEO, search engine optimization, but then also in the approach, I think, maybe towards rankings and some other stuff. There was an attempt to try to create, I don't want to say scientific, but a more objective basis for some of this. You tell me what you were thinking, because you're the guy who did.
Yeah. So here's the reality of it. And from until I think it was 2005, or 2006, I can't remember. I oversaw the rankings at rivals.com. From start to finish. Yes, other people were involved and I had regional guys that would rank the players in their region and all this other stuff. But ultimately I had the final call. I was the editor in chief of the whole thing, and that's just how we did it. Well, here's the reality of it. I had over 200 people working for me at that time. And not just for me, but for the network, you know? And so there were 10 recruiting guys in football and 3 or 4 in basketball. And then there were all these team sites out there that were covering recruiting as well that would give us an insight as to who the best players their staffs thought were the best players and that sort of stuff. So you're collecting all this information. And ultimately, you know, one guy would say, well, my rankings are the best. And another guy would say, my rankings are the best. And I'll never want to, let me give you an example of one thing. I had this guy that was 23 years old working for us. He was a young guy, hard worker. He lived in the state of Georgia. There was a receiver in Atlanta that ran a 4.6 5.40 at a combine. Okay. He stood on the table and said, he has to be the number one player in the state. And the Southeast regional guy that was over the top of him said, no, you can't make a 4.6 5 receiver the number one player in the state of Georgia. And I asked the guy, I go, so I went a little bit deeper with his name was Jeremy Patterson. I go, Jeremy, you know, what's the deal? And he goes, well, Bobby, I think he's the best player in the country. I don't just think he's good. I think he's the best player in the country. And I was like, whoa. And I'm, and here I am. I've got 15, 20 years of experience. And this guy, 23-year-old, is telling me that a guy that ran a 4.65 40 may be the best player in the country. Either the guy is, the 23-year-old's out to lunch, or there's something we're missing about this guy. Well, I didn't have time overseeing 200-300 kids, three riders, to go and do enough due diligence. So I went with what the regional guy told us.
Right.
Well, that player that ran the 4.65 was Calvin Johnson. Who was right? The 23-year-old that had just seen him and knew him better, right? And so I think that Calvin Johnson, you go back and look at Rivals, because we were the only ones ranking at that time. Maybe Scout was it. I think we were the only ones that had him in the top 50 in the country, but that wasn't high enough. So from there, examples like that color my thinking about the recruiting rankings industry as a whole, the NFL draft. It helps color that, in that I don't think any one person is the best at this job. I think it's more, you know, how do I say this the right way? It's more an amalgamation of information that you get. And so more people, what we did at 24/7 is tried to take everybody's rankings and create what we called the composite.
Mm-hmm.
And that in and of itself was a new feature. And so you had ESPN guys out there, which had guys that I respect doing rankings, guys at Rivals that I respected doing the rankings, guys at 24/7 doing rankings. And, you know, Shannon Terry came up with the concept. Shannon's a longtime CEO of Rivals 24/7 and now On3. And we agreed and we promoted that and over our own rankings. And we made the business decision to say this is going to be the industry's ranking, because Rivals, we had done a good job with it to make it the de facto source for recruiting information across the country. Well, how do you beat Rivals? Well, you come up with a consensus or a composite to do that. And that's what we went after. And I think we were successful with it. And I think to this day, it's a great representation of it. And we've changed that now at On3. People don't realize that 24/7, we didn't necessarily agree that everybody was as good as us. So we slanted it towards our rankings, gave ourselves, I think, a 40% share of the rankings and the other two 30 each or something. So it would be, you know, 40, 30, 30. Whereas yep. Now at On3, we are straight 25% across the board. So everybody gets 25% value. And that's what we come up with the On3 consensus to make it even a more true representation.
Well, that was really smart by Shannon and you to implement, because it taps into something that's been proven in social science and actual science, which is wisdom of the crowd. That a crowd of people who are reasonably informed collectively can typically come up with a better broad-based opinion than a single expert who has a narrow window and a narrow number of inputs simply because they're one person. So I think that's really smart. And I like that right away. That was one of many things at 24/7 that was good. And then I don't know if you've ever heard this, but it's really interesting. And I think it should influence personnel departments or even how we talk about recruits. But David Epstein wrote a very good book called Range. And he delves into
I got to tell you this. I read that book after you recommended it to me about a year and a half ago. So yeah, I've read it.
What did you think of it?
I think it's books like that, the Malcolm Gladwells and those guys, they Freakonomics.
Yeah.
They put
Moneyball.
They put terminology behind, you know, maybe some of what your gut thinks. Yes. Or what your gut shouldn't think.
Right.
They basically demolish pre-existing thoughts or preconceived notions. So they do one of two things. They either say, yeah, you're on the right track, or no, you're really off track. And so the, you know, not to speak directly to the Epstein book, but those books in general, I like because it gives you a new way of thinking of things.
Yeah, it's a useful form of categorization, right? I mean, I've heard someone define intelligence as the ability to make fine distinctions. And that makes a lot of sense to me, right? One of the things that he mentioned specifically in Range, and it was almost like a throwaway few pages or paragraphs, and it was that the simple act of analogy to an established player, when NFL scouts or say even college scouts are talking about a player, by simply saying something that's neutral in analogy, which is this. So for example, Bobby, hey, this edge player from North Carolina, obviously he's from the same hometown as Lawrence Taylor, actually looks a little like Lawrence Taylor. Then the guy goes on to explain that he runs a 5.0 40 and he's 6'4", 240, and he has 9.5-inch hands, and here's attributes, and here are his stats. The simple act of analogizing him to an impactful all-pro player who represents the apogee of a position, even though the analogy was that they just came from the same hometown and that the guy physically looks a little bit like him, that player will now elevate substantially in the minds of every analyst in that room. It's a weird little earworm that sticks in your brain and categorizes. So I don't know if you know this, but one of the things that the Dallas Mavericks forbid in the scouting process, and I think the Thunder do this too with Sam Presti, was they would forbid negative nicknames or even joking about a player. So if you remember the Gasols?
Yeah.
One of the Gasol brothers, it's not Powell, it's the other one.
Mark.
Mark was really, he was a fat ass, right? So there was a lot of nicknames in the building of like, oh, fatty and all this stuff. And it would denigrate the player of what he could actually be, which was he's incredibly skilled. He was a great passer. He was a great shooter. He was just out of shape. And you can fix that. I mean, if you're an NBA team, you should be able to get a guy in shape. And it allowed him to sink down all these draft boards because they had these nicknames attached to him that were highly negative, right? And it obscured what the player could be. So it may sound like overly controlling to say, hey, no nicknames are allowed, but they don't want people to get these little imprints in their brain that takes away from just looking at the traits. They just want to talk about the traits. They don't want to talk about who you would comp him to. You know, sometimes a comp is helpful, but if the comp changes how that player is perceived, it might elevate them too much or denigrate them too much.
And who's doing the comparison?
Yes.
I mean, so that's what I find sometimes, and whether it's on three or whatever, I read some of the player comparisons and I just disagree.
Right.
Because I think that some of them just aren't accurate. And so... I think that from that recruiting standpoint, as you look at across, you know, what 24/7's done and what On3's done, obviously we have the player comparison. The crystal ball was another advance. I think that power of the crowd that you were talking about,
yes.
Where not, it's not just one, it's 20 experts are all of a sudden going in and you have this deal. What Shannon again devised, I believe, is really interesting is this recruiting prediction machine that when you talk about iterative, where it'll keep building on itself, this thing is machine learning. So this is the first year for the RPM. Next year, it should be better.
Right.
And the year after that, it should be better because what it's doing is getting more and more detailed information about actually what drives decisions for players. And so what you guys don't see on the front end of what, not, I shouldn't say you, but what fans don't see on the front end or on the back end of the recruiting prediction machine is how many logged unofficial visits we're talking about, how many people from a certain high school go to that, to a different school, or do they go to out of school? You know what? I mean, it's just a lot of things that people don't realize are going into that. that over time, that RPM is not going to be just good. It's going to be great. And so I feel like ultimately it'll be a year or two down the road. Year three, I think you'll really see that go beyond just an actual prediction, right? To where you'll actually see some things that are pretty revealing.
Skynet is going to become self-aware in 2025, Bobby. We're going to have to kill it. Terminators are coming, buddy. All right. So you had a sort of organizational iteration. You went from Rivals, you went to 24/7. And then now you're the eternal gypsy wandering, starting company after company. And now you go to On3. So I want to ask one question specifically and one broad. Why On3? And then secondly, what has been the reward and value of being an entrepreneur to you?
Let me hit the why On3 first. Shannon and I are great friends. I've known him since 1999. He and I have worked together forever. And I just think he's, you know, extraordinarily bright, hardworking, and willing to give things a chance to work. What On3 is doing right now, for example, with NIL valuation, nobody else is even touching it. And it is driving a lot of what recruiting and player makeup is going to look like, roster makeup in college sports. Nobody else is even touching it right now. ESPN's not touching it, right? I mean, the only group that are touching it are the ones that are actually taking money, like Open Doors or Influencer. And so as a media company, to not acknowledge that is wrong. And I think it showed that. So why On3 for me? Because Shannon knows, he's looking at it just like I looked at recruiting 25 years ago and said, this is the lifeblood of college football and it needs more exposure. And he did too. But that was really my nexus point. And we want these teams. There's enough true oranges out there, for lack of a better term, back in the 25 years ago, that every single school could have one, right? And it could be online as opposed to newsprint. Well, now we're getting into, just this next iteration of what college football is going to look like. And I know that On3 is going to be there, because as long as Shannon Terry's there, I really, really believe On3 will be there. And that doesn't mean these other places that we've created, 24/7 or Rivals, aren't still going to have a place in the ecosystem, because they do. I mean, we sold Rivals in 2007, and here it is, 15 years later, and it's still running. We sold 24/7 in 2016. Here it is 6 years later, and it's still going. And they're both going strong. I would doubt, and I wouldn't say that necessarily about Rivals, but 24/7 is still going strong. And so I feel like from that vantage point, why On3 for me? It's that Shannon said he wanted to do another one and he asked me to, and I said yes. I mean, that's really bottom line, because I had a cush job at 24/7, didn't need money, et cetera, et cetera. And on top of that, I think that I wanted to help build something again at Inside Texas. I felt like Inside Texas, and it was a well-known, respected brand, but had never been brought out to the masses before, in my opinion. It had always kind of been behind a curtain. And I knew that doing what I know how to do with people that know, that are really intelligent, and what Shannon could do with the actual website itself, from an architecture standpoint, to your point, it would just blossom. And I wanted to be a part of something like that on a micro level at Texas. And that's another reason why.
Yeah, I think so the entrepreneur point, I'll let you address the thing you said about the ecosystem. The world is wide enough for other networks, for multiple voices, for blogs, for different forms of commentary, YouTube,
for, obviously. For podcast, for podcasts and YouTube.
What, for podcasts.
Yeah.
I mean, there would be a thought even 15 years ago, Bobby, that you and I both having podcasts would be competitive rather than complementary, right? That all said, there is room in the ecosystem. Most ecosystems have an apex predator, and On3 is the apex predator.
Yeah, I think we're onto something, because I just, they're silent on NIL.
Yes.
Other people, why? Because you don't,
I'll tell you,
because you don't, I'll tell you why, Paul. They don't have the leader. They don't have the leadership to go. They don't have the leadership to go after it. They don't have a clue. They don't even know where to start. And so
it's that, and also a reluctance to accept what football now is rather than what people wish it would be.
Yep. I agree. Yeah. I think that, I think, you know, On3 is, you know, we're reticent to say all of this, but of the top 25 or so publishers that were on Rivals, I think 20 of them, 20 plus are coming to On3 over the next however many years. We've got ourselves in a really, really good situation, and just need to keep going and keep pushing the envelope. I think that and we have good people, not just Shannon. It's not just a one man gang or a two man gang. It's, you know, Shannon's done a great job cultivating a leadership group that I think is, you know, they have, the one thing that Shannon and I always talk about, and that separates us historically, whether it's been at Rivals 24/7 or now at On3, is we always hire guys or girls that love college sports. It's not okay to just like it. It's not okay to just like your job. If you just like your job, that's not going to get you as far in life. Not when you're a upstart, you know, barely capitalized young company. You have to love it and be willing to go the extra mile and give it the elbow grease it needs, or else it's just going to die on the vine. It's just another idea. But Shannon, not only does he look to hire those people, he attracts those people because of who he is, I think, as a leader as well. But you will see him spit out a bunch of guys that say they are, you know, very passionate, but aren't necessarily. And, you know, they don't always work well with each other. And so, and that's just one of those facts. As far as, you know, what being an entrepreneur has meant to me, I look back on it in 97, I got offered a job to be the assistant recruiting coordinator at the University of Maryland. At the time, I was probably making 45 grand a year working for the National Recruiting Advisor, maybe 50, 55. Doing some freelance, I was probably 60 to 65 grand a year. They offered me a job, and I had wanted to work for a college. I thought that's what I wanted to grow up to do. It's one of the reasons I got into recruiting. I wanted to be a coach. I wanted to be a off-field administrator, a GM, something like that. And here's this pathway to going into that. And you know what? I looked around, and I had been in it long enough at that time where everybody had been changing jobs. It is, I mean, college, people don't realize college coaching, and it is a nomadic profession.
Yes.
And I'm not a nomad. I mean, I know that sound. One of my best friends in college coaching is a guy named Dwayne Aquina. Dwayne, and I've known Dwayne since he was at Arizona under Dick Tomey way back when.
Desert Swarm.
Yeah, yeah. He was a tremendous, you know, secondary coach for there before he came to Texas. And, you know, Dwayne's the same way. He goes, I don't like changing jobs. I mean, he got demoted at Texas one time. From defensive coordinator to cornerbacks coach. And everybody said, oh, well, we're going to have to fire Dwayne Aquina because he isn't going to be he's not going to take not being the defensive coordinator. He's going to want to go somewhere else and not be the DB coach. And I called Dwayne. I go, Dwayne, what do you think of this? He goes, Bobby, I'm one of those guys. I didn't get the job done at Texas as the defensive coordinator. And you know what? What do I tell my players? If they're not getting the job done, I have to replace you. Well, that doesn't mean I want my players to quit the team. I'm not going to quit the team. He just had a different viewpoint, but he's also only had three jobs in 30 years. He's been in Arizona, he's been at Texas, and he's been at Stanford.
Yeah.
I've had three jobs in 30 years. Or 25 years, whatever, right? I'm just not – some people are made for that. And so I turned that job down. I got some other job offers that were larger title and all this other stuff through the years. And the reality of it is that, you know, as an entrepreneur, you make your own way. You bet on yourself and yourself alone, in large part. Obviously, I bet on some people that bet with me, like Shannon. And the folks at Inside Texas too. And, that's different. You control more of it, than you do if you're in the administration side of it. Doesn't mean that I don't respect highly the people that do, do that. It's just, it's not for me. And so, the reward I get in return is I've watched, if my daughter played high school volleyball, I watched every single match she ever played. I went to travel tournaments with her. I went to whatever. My son's in going to be in 11th grade this year. Anything he's ever done, I've been there, you know. And that's what I want, you know. That's more me than, you know, being, you know, calling the shots from the, you know, eighth floor of New House, or not New House, of Belmont, like they used to. So, that's what it's meant to me, not financially. Financially is even a different category or a different topic, but that's what's guided, because I do think I could have made just as much money eventually as a, you know, coach, AD, recruiting coordinator, et cetera, as I did this way, GM, if I would have tried to set out to do that 25 years ago or 20 years ago.
I guess there's the scary part of being an entrepreneur is it's all on you. The rewarding part of being an entrepreneur is it's all on you. And you have a degree of control and structure for your own life, right?
Yeah, I think the big part is once you're successful once as an entrepreneur, you don't worry about that part as much. You know what has to happen. And I to be honest, when I worked for the National Recruiting Advisor, it was really just me and one other employee. And so I was the driving force behind that. And so I felt, even though it wasn't my money on the line at the time until I became a partner, I felt like I was the one running the company. I was cutting the checks. I was, making sure we did what we had to do to get it done. And so I think once you get that confidence, the first one in the books, so to speak, the rest are just degrees of bets. You know, the more, you know, Rivals was a bigger bet than National Recruiting Advisor. On3 was a bigger bet than Rivals. 24/7 was a bigger bet than Rivals. On3 is a bigger bet than 24/7. And so you escalate, but you don't necessarily lose sight of the path you've come down or lose the confidence that made you go in that direction. Because I think, and you know this, I mean, just from watching it, is you bet on people in life. They're not infallible people. They will make some mistakes. Bill Parcells was a mistake as the Cowboys head coach. Okay, so, you know, they're not infallible, but by and large, you bet on those people and yourself, and I think you're in good shape. You know, I feel like that's where it's been good for me. And I've been lucky enough to, I can't tell you how lucky I am that David McWilliams said yes to letting me work for free, for example. I mean, that really propelled me and started me on a path that I don't know that I would have ever gotten out of way from, and I would be some frustrated accountant somewhere otherwise. It's my thoughts.
Yeah, I have similar feelings. The first time I made a bet on myself, I'd been in the corporate world. I was in biotech. Then I was actually working as a representative of the Harvard School of Public Health, the epidemiology division, interestingly enough. And I was just dissatisfied with corporate America, even though on paper I was successful and I had responsibilities and I was managing people and, oh, look at the amount of revenue I'm responsible for and all this. And then I just realized, like, this isn't very fun. Like, I'm not that work should be fun or that the life is all about fun. Fun's overrated. You know, things that are rewarding are much more about, you know, you can go to an amusement park and it's pretty fun. It's not going to make a change in your life. It's not something you can build upon, right? But I just realized, like, I don't like going to work. I'm not enjoying this. And I kind of made a bet on myself. I did Barking Carnival, then we created this network. We ended up selling it to Vox, which was its own hilarious, bizarre story. But then once I realized I could do it once, boy, you're absolutely right. Your confidence goes through the roof that, oh, this is duplicable. And entrepreneurs aren't supermen. These are hardworking, capable people who just made a bet on themselves. And you just make a commitment that you're just going to stick through it and try to make it work. And when you see it happen and you see it work to whatever degree, then you're emboldened to do it again. Because now you're like, okay, this is doable. And I'm not worried about insurance, and I'm not worried about how am I going to pay this? And I've got a kid, how am I going to do this? And the responsible things to keep my corporate job. Well, actually, now we know as layoffs come and recession hits, sometimes the responsible thing to do is bet on yourself because you don't have control over what the corporation decides.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I feel like, you know, my actual first thought was epidemiology in Harvard, and I'm just imagining you speaking in front of a group talking about monkeypox right now.
Yeah, that would be my personal experience, Bobby, offering a cautionary tale.
No, I think that I've always had that entrepreneurial bent to me. You know, whether it was, I would go say, what's the saying? Eat what you kill.
Yeah.
Right. It's like the whole mowing yards thing, right? If I wanted more baseball cards, I had to go mow more yards. Right. And so I felt like I got myself into a situation at the National Recruiting Advisor, then at Rivals and at 24/7, that the harder I worked, the more I got, the more I could do. Right. And, I think that once you get that, if you're a hard worker, which I was never a hard worker in school. I was a hard worker outside of school. So it doesn't mean you get good grades.
You were a hard worker in your passions.
Yes, exactly. And so if you really have that in you and you can block that out, block all the other stuff and realize that, you know, that people don't realize there's sacrifice involved in that. For example, I didn't watch pro football for 10 years because I worked Sundays from 10 in the morning until midnight every Sunday, because that was when every kid was getting home from a recruiting visit, or they were home because they didn't have practice on Sundays for high school. So I could call them on the phone and talk to them and get the recruiting information. And so I would 10 to midnight. I mean, that call the West Coast, call Hawaii. I mean, and if you're willing to make sacrifices that like that, I feel, and it doesn't always have to be that big a sacrifice, obviously, or that severe, but that's part of what being an entrepreneur is. It's not just putting money in and, put money in and watch it grow. You don't just flip houses by just putting money in. You flip houses by putting money in, then working your butt off to make it look better because you have some ideas, but you really have to work at it to flip it for a profit, you know? And so that's the same idea of an entrepreneur. If you're not willing to work, it's just, don't do it. Go do something else. But
yeah, I was talking to a a woman who I really like. I have a lot of respect for, and she's just been a friend I've known all my life. She used to work for me, and she's someone at different times has come to me for career advice, and we've always just stayed in touch. And she had a divorce, and just who she was dating, and she said, "When I see entrepreneur in a guy's profile, I know he's either an amazing, hardworking guy or a complete bum."
They can be both.
They can be both. Because entrepreneur, in a weird way, is telling people you're unemployable.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
But in a sense, that makes you the employer, right? Yeah. Because you want to do it your way, and you have a sense and a vision. Well, Bobby, you're a guy who's done it your way. And I'm interested to see what this I don't know. Is this the last iteration? Is On3 the coup de grace, or are we going to have 4.0?
Well, I'm getting up. I'm 52. So okay. I don't know that I would have more in me after this. At some point, you know, I do want to take some days off, et cetera. But right now, I think I'm focused solely on it. And on Inside Texas and making it the best that it can be. Very excited about Steve Sarkisian and what he's got going on right now. There's something about him that, as a Texas grad, is I feel he fits Texas really, really well.
Texas as it is now.
Yeah, he's not too folksy. Like, I mean, I love Mac Brown, don't get me wrong, but I thought Mac was a little too folksy for people that actually went to Texas.
Nailed it.
You know, Steve Sarkisian is a little bit more straight over tackle with things. And I think that people don't realize he's not some just nice guy either. I mean, he has a very business side to him that I think there's an acumen there that goes beyond you know, that people wouldn't necessarily recognize. So I like him. I think that he's got a wonderful offensive mind. It's a brand of football that's exciting, in my opinion. And, you know, I think that in and of itself could really help energize the program and keep it going. More than all of that, though, is I think that it's an interesting time in college football and sports in general, not just with NIL, but with the new rules that people are putting in place for transfers. It's just, I mean, it is what it is. I'd also like to say you've been pretty good at yourself, reinventing yourself time over time. It's one of those things that takes not just courage, but know-how and ingenuity. And so it's one of the reasons why I listen to your podcast. So.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yep. I try to be like Madonna.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Hey, you know, on Steve, I agree with you. He's a guy I personally like. I'm personally rooting for. He's a guy I like to be friends with, right? He's a guy that I see him and I'm like, oh, I know that guy. I know that type. And I'll say this, I've got some friends. So one benefit to my former professional corporate career is that I used to travel around, and basically I was the guy to help salespeople get better at their job. I was a sales trainer. And so I traveled all over the U.S., particularly the Western U.S., and I got to be really good friends with a lot of the guys in the Utah district. And most of these guys were BYU grads. And Steve Sarkisian is a beloved figure for BYU guys of a certain age and who came up when he was the quarterback, because he led them to this really good football team. The very charismatic, you know, this is the one that laid waste to the Wrecking Crew, right? In their opener or early in the season. And don't mistake the California cool. One of the things that makes Steve Sarkisian so beloved and sort of an anti-hero at BYU, not quite Jim McMahon, maybe he took that too far, but is he was a shit-talking, fiery, inspiring leader and absolutely beloved. And had pretty limited physical skills. You know, he was their Applewhite in some respects, but more fiery outwardly. And he is beloved. And, you know, that is a community where you want to you hold up the Steve Youngs, the Ty Detmers, the Robbie Boscos, because they were also LDS, right? And that means something. Steve Sarkisian was non-LDS, and he is absolutely beloved on that campus and by all those guys in their 30s and 40s because of what he represented just as a leader and as a fiery guy, like a guy that said, hey, we don't have to be upright, uptight Mormons on game day. Let's be nasty. Let's get after it. And that team was like that. So anyway, just an aside about Steve Sarkisian.
No, I think it's great. I think that hopefully they get a quarterback that can deliver the ball.
Yeah.
If they get that, I think the offense can be terrific.
Yeah.
Because everything else is there. I mean, the skill position. I mean, I can't remember a skill position group at all positions other than quarterback that were this loaded. Maybe Cedric and Roy Williams at the same time, but there weren't the number 2, 3, and 4 receivers weren't even close to Nayor or Whittington even. I mean, BJ Johnson wasn't that good compared to those guys. The second running back wasn't as good as Roshan. I don't know. We'll see, Paul. The one that worries me on that team is the quarterback position. Just how good, how soon? I think Quinn Ewers is going to be good. Is he going to be good in year one though? In year one, or is he going to be good 8 games in after Texas is already 4-4,
taking their licks?
Yeah, and then the second piece is just the defense. I mean, I felt like they tried to fit a round peg into a square hole last year when they lost Jacoby Jones, and the inability to make alterations to that plan midseason were difficult to watch as someone that knows a little bit about football. I'm certainly not an expert X and O guys like some people, but I often wonder how much of that was it was his first Kwiatkowski's first year at Texas. So the kids were already unfamiliar. They didn't really have a full spring because of the pandemic. And then they also had no off weeks in there at once. They found out what was wrong. They couldn't really, there's no off week to implement and train. It was just, okay, let's get ready for Kansas or let's get ready for, you know, Iowa State, whoever. And so I go back and forth personally on the defense about whether or not it is going to be appreciably better next year or this year, I should say now, since right. We're, you know, a week and a half away from kids showing up. But those two things will tell us the story of this season. I think quarterback play, because God, I think they're so loaded everywhere. If they can find somebody to get people the ball, it's going to be fun to watch. And on defense, are they just a little bit better, or are they appreciably better because they got smarter players? Not smarter players necessarily, but players that are more educated about their assignments and what they're supposed to do, and not as I don't even know the right word that I'm looking for there, but not as in tune, I guess, with what the goal is.
Yeah, you know, I wrote this formational diversity piece that's on the Inside Texas website right now. Hey, if you guys aren't a member of Inside Texas and you're listening to this podcast, you're crazy. And by the way, if you want to do it at a severe steep discount for a year, buy my preview, the Thinking Texas Football preview for 2022. There's an Easter egg. There's a code in there that will get you $50 off for a year membership. So there's my good service to you, listener, if you're not a member of Inside Texas. But I wrote a piece about formational diversity and how this offense has so many different ways it can play. And someone asked the question, hey, are you more concerned about what's our bigger governor on the engine? Is it the quarterback or the offensive line? And I said, if the quarterback plays well enough, the offensive line won't matter much. And the lesser the quarterback plays, the more the offensive line will matter. Because there's going to be enough weapons out there that defenses, particularly the defenses that Texas will face, other than Alabama, they're going to have to make choices before the snap about what they're going to allow. And if you have a quick-minded quarterback who sees the field and has the ball to get, he has the arm to get the ball out to hard throws to different spots, boy, Texas can be very, very difficult to stop.
I was talking to Ian Boyd yesterday. Mm-hmm. We did a video cast that I'll release later today on a Tuesday. He was talking, he had something interesting. He said he thought Baylor had the best offensive and defensive lines in the Big 12 returning.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that Oklahoma State probably has the best defensive line returning.
Yeah. I like Oklahoma State's defensive line, but for their system, Baylor's defensive line is perfect. They're going to do exactly what they need. And then their offensive line has some individual talent, specifically Galvin and Gall. It's actually how they play together, and it's their system that makes them go. Jeff Grimes, his outside zone system, it's beautiful. And Baylor's offensive line, they move like an orchestra. It's coordinated. And that's an underrated part of offensive line play. You know, one of the keys to offensive line play, I think, is don't suck at any one position because you can get picked on. And then two, your guys all being on the same page, being coherent. It's a big deal in offensive line play. You don't have to have all-stars at every position to run the ball for 6 yards.
Yeah, I just feel like you win up front most often. And so if that's the case, you know, it's interesting. I mean, we'll see. I just think losing Bernard and Petrie.
Yes.
On defense. Those guys are really good football players.
Well, and on offense, I'm going to come out with some rankings soon, Bobby, about the best wide receiver corps in the Big 12. Baylor's going to be eighth or ninth. They lost Tyquan Thornton. They don't have any experienced replacements. Their most experienced wide receiver is Gavin Holmes. He's had two seasons end with ACL. That's their wide receiver corps. So I like Blake Shapen certainly better than Bohannon. But that Baylor wide receiver corps, they ain't Texas. It's not just
I'll tell you.
They ain't TCU, I can assure you.
So I'm just going to say this, and I know he's not quite the athlete, but Blake Shapen gives me Colt McCoy vibes.
Yeah, he's super accurate.
Yeah.
Crazy
and
accurate.
And quick.
He is.
Yeah, and so I'm quick with the ball. Not necessarily – he's not the athlete Colt was.
He gets it out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. But that'll be interesting to see where it goes, how Texas reacts when they're in tight games too. When your offense can be so explosive and you get in tight games, I just wonder. And it's one thing when you have a quarterback like Sarkisian did at Alabama, with Tua Tagovailoa that was a, you know, junior or senior, whatever he was, and a guy that's not played yet, really, in Quinn Ewers or limited in Hudson Card. So, you know, a lot of tight games played in this league, and Texas does not overwhelm anybody with talent quite yet. I think they may be on their way with that, but not when they head to the SEC. They're not going to overwhelm anybody. They may be alongside of people, but they won't overwhelm them. So I'm interested to see how it rolls. Texas definitely has an interesting season ahead of it. I think for the good of the fan base and for the good of the program as a whole, it cannot be another bad year.
No.
And if it is, I think Texas is going to lose some fans over, because I think it's been too long since Texas has been traditionally good. Sam Ellinger's Sugar Bowl win was a good year, right? So it's not like Texas hasn't won a big bowl game in 10 years, but it's been a mediocre 10 years.
Yeah, and before we leave, circling back on the defense, you made a good point about whether they're appreciably better. And I would say, in what way? Because one of the things that was very frustrating about last year's defense is not that they just gave up a bunch of yardage and points. They got controlled, Bobby. They got controlled in tight ball games where the other team ran clock, ran the offense exactly the way they wanted, because they knew they were going to score at the end of this 15 play drive. And, you know, look no further than the Oklahoma State game, where they hand the ball off in the fourth quarter 14 times for 118 yards to Jalen Warren, 5, 10, 20 yards a pop. And we literally could not line up and stop a telegraphed run play. So if Texas can even do that and get the offense back on the field, we might just outscore people.
Arkansas was like that.
Yes.
Oklahoma was like that late in the game.
Yep.
The counter play. Oklahoma State was like that. Baylor felt that way late. Baylor.
Yep.
Yeah. I agree with you. And it's not always the score, it's the how, right?
How it felt.
Yeah.
As you watched.
I mean, if you know, if you were in the stadium, you were deflated.
Yes.
You know, and completely defeated in that Oklahoma State game. So if you were same, I talked to a guy that is in the Longhorn Hall of Fame. Okay. Old guy, played on national championship team, had never left a game early in his career while going to home and away for 40 years. Okay. He left the Arkansas game midway through the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Because he was like, I just couldn't watch it anymore. They could not stop the quarterback run. He goes, I don't know what to tell you other than that. And so I feel like you know it and I know it, but I don't know what we're looking for this year exactly. And I think it's hard to put our fingers on it and know it, but you'll know it when you see it. Mm-hmm. And all they have to do is get better quarterback play overall and improve on defense, and they're going to win more games. I think they have so much skill talent on offense. I wish they would have had a fourth year starter that could just dish the ball. I mean, I think that offense would. Sark does a great job drawing up plays and getting people open. It is like a receiver's dream in that offense, because you get space. You're on the move. There's a reason a lot of these receivers are attracted to this offense, because they're just like, good God, I'm open. Every play doesn't have to be me running parallel I even look at the Bill O'Brien offense that he ran with Alabama last year compared to what Sark ran. And I mean, four in routes or out routes, depending on what side of the road, all at the same time, you break it the same. I mean, that's not inventive or creative. That's called, you know, red zone NFL crap that sometimes works about 25% of the time, and you're happy when it does. And so I'm very, very high on Sark overall, and I hope it comes through for him.
Yep. Ditto. Well, that, I'm going to bid adieu on the behalf of the Bob Father. Bobby, it's been a pleasure talking to you. It's a pleasure working with you.
Yeah, same here.
Thanks for taking the time. And hey, I think I owe you a couple of podcasts. I think we're going to do a preview at some point of our opponents. And
I think that people love it. I think that you do a great job, Paul, and I appreciate you. Make sure you read the Thinking Texas Football that Paul puts out. Make sure you join InsideTexas.com if you would. I just feel like I've been doing this a long time, 30 plus years, and I don't think there's ever been a group that cares more about the product and produces more intelligent conversation and breaks more news from a recruiting perspective than the group that we have together at InsideTexas.com. You truly get so many different voices that are educated and understand the Longhorns.
Yeah, I've said it before. I think it's the 27 Yankees. I really do. And I'll let the listeners or the readers decide who's Lou Gehrig and Babe Ruth. But the bottom line is there's enough different guys with enough different talents that you can make an argument for any one of them. And it's a joy to click on my own board, right? Our board, and read something and go, man, that's really good. That's really good. I wish I'd written that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a great feeling.
Yep, it is. All right, Paul, I appreciate it, bud.
Hey, likewise. We'll do it again, Bobby. Thank you. Appreciate it. And you take care, bud.
Have a good one.
Are you worried that recent events have derailed your retirement plans? It certainly made us reassess all aspects of ours. And that's why we're proud to offer our listeners a chance to work with David McClellan, a fiduciary financial advisor from Forum Financial. David's practice specializes in financial life coaching and retirement planning. And right now, he's offering free consultations for our listeners if you mention the podcast. As part of this consultation, David can help you understand your financial freedom number and what that means to you in assessing your future financial plans. If you want to build wealth, if you want to make optimal decisions within your financial life, David is someone you need to talk to. You can reach him at 312-933-8823. Once again, that's David McClellan at 312-933-8823. He's located in Austin, Texas, but he's got a nationwide clientele. Do yourself a favor and get some great financial advice for free and see if you might want to work with Mr. McClellan. I think you'll be happy with your phone call. Do you need a realtor in Central Texas? Of course you do. We all need a realtor in Central Texas, even those of us who live in Dallas or Houston or San Francisco or Denver, Colorado. You need to go to Central Texas anyway. And the reason is Laura Baker is a fantastic realtor. She's great at what she does. She's a member of the elite Andy Allen team for Keller Williams. You can reach her at 512-784-0505. Talk with Laura if you're thinking about putting your house on the market. This is a great time to get market comps. If you're looking to buy in the market, you need all the help you can get. Call Laura and it's 512-784-0505.
Hey, y'all, just a quick heads up that, of course, the Thinking Texas Football Preview, the Burnt Orange Bible, is still available at Amazon, on Apple, and, of course, at Smashwords. That's for you Kindle e-readers. You can download the MOBI version, and it's a perfect conversion. Hey, I really appreciate all the folks who have gone ahead and bought the preview and, of course, who have left reviews. If you're on the fence, if you got a toe dipped in the water, you're not sure if you want to jump in, hey, do me a favor, just go to Amazon, enter in 2022 Thinking Texas Football or Longhorn Football Prospectus, or put my name, Paul Wadlington. The preview will pop up. You'll see 25 reviews as of July 21st, and you'll see that they're all 5 stars. If you go look at Apple, you'll see 14 reviews, all 5 stars. If you go to Smashwords, there's 7 or 8 reviews, all 5 stars. I think you get the gist. The point is, I think a lot of people enjoy it. It's the 10th time I've done this, and I don't think you'll get a better perspective on the Texas Longhorn football team, the Big 12, or the Texas Longhorn opponents. It's written with hopefully some wit, clarity, and insight, and I appreciate all of you supporting the Burnt Orange Bible. Go out there and buy a copy. You'll enjoy it.